I am so glad that you're here with us today as we continue our series, We Are CalTAP. And the goal of this series is to help us as a church know who we are and be recommitted, maybe even in some ways reinvigorated to be who God has called us to be. Over the last few weeks, we've kind of in the first half of the series, we've focused on what we've called membership matters. Why membership matters, as well as the matters of membership, the things that are important, the requirements. And maybe for some of you here today, becoming a member, partnering with us here at CalTAP is your next step that you need to take. And if that's the case, I want to encourage you to do that. Out in the foyer, in this first foyer here, when you go out, right before you go out the door, there's a table to your right, and there are membership applications, there are constitutions that you can take, and you can fill that out, you can bring those back in. That's kind of the next step, is for you to fill out that membership application, and then come back, and then we will give you an opportunity to share your story, and continue to follow the process that we've been talking about the last couple of weeks. But today we're moving into part two of our series. The second part of the series, We Are CalTAP, is really focusing on CalTAP core values, the things that are really most important to us as a church, the things that drive us. In his book, Values Driven Leadership, Aubrey Mauffers, he calls core values, he defines core values this way. Core values are the constant, passionate, and sacred principles that drive the ministry. Constant, passionate, sacred core principles that drive the ministry. Now, I want, as I think about that, as we think about that definition, we think about what are core values, I want to start by saying this. I want to tell you what core values are not. They are not the things we've talked about the last 4 weeks. They are not our purpose or our doctrine. And you can see on your note sheet that some of these things are listed here. They're not the purpose. They're not the doctrine. They're not our core doctrines. They're not our core creed or our distinctive beliefs. Those things, the purpose and the core values, really, in many ways, are the road that we ride on. Those are the things that are the foundation of what we do. And so we're not going to talk about a core value of the Bible because that's our doctrine. That's our core belief. Okay, that's something different. Core value is a little different than that. Neither is our core values our mission or our vision of who we will be. Those really, our mission and vision really are more along the lines of how or what we do, what we look out, the vehicle that we're in. Helping people take their next step on the journey to Jesus is our mission. It's not our core value. And so that's more of what it looks like. You know, it's kind of the vehicle, if you will. Last week, we talked about our strategy. And core values are not our strategy. Our strategy is to come, connect, commit, to share, serve, and soak. And we broke that down last week. That's how we get there. We said last week, that's kind of like the tires on the car. That's kind of like the drive shaft, the thing that moves, that makes the contact with the road and helps facilitate the vehicle moving forward. You see, the core values really are the engine that drive the car. It's why we do what we do. It's the motivation behind what we do. It's the reason we get up in the morning. It's that which makes us excited and causes us to do things. I don't know if you know this, but you in your own life have core values. Your family has core values. You have things. Even if you haven't identified them, you have the things that drive you. It's what makes your family different and unique and special. It's the things that are important to you. And so collectively as a church, we want to identify what are those things that are important to us? What are those things that really drive us in our ministry? What are the things that permeate everything that we do? The core values, we should see them when we walk into a worship service and say, oh, I can see how those play out. They should drive us when we walk in to serve in the nursery Oh, that's why we do this. Our children's ministry. Oh, I get it. I can see the motivation there. Or whatever other ministry we might be involved in. The core values kind of become who we are. Why we do what we do. Now, I want to say something. As we move into this section, over the next few weeks, we're going to talk about core values. And I'm just going to be honest right up front. Some of the core values, some of the things that we say we want to be important to us. We want those things to drive us. But we haven't arrived yet. The engine isn't finely tuned. There are certain things that we're going to talk about over the next few weeks that we're like, man, we're just not quite there yet, but we want to be there. Okay, they may be aspirational values. Others of these you're going to look at and you're going to hear and you'll be like, oh yeah, I see that. I get why you say that that's a core value of who we are. I understand why, and I can see it play out in our church. But right now, we're not perfect. We never will be. There will always be dents and dings in who we are because we're people. And that's okay. But these are the things that we want to drive us. So let's look at the first one here this morning. If you have a Bible, would you open it to Matthew chapter 9, verses 35 through 38. Matthew chapter 9. If you don't own a Bible and you're using one of the Bibles in our racks, it's right there in front of you. You'll find Matthew 9, 35 on page 1514. Page 1514 is where you'll find that. And let me just say this, if you don't have a Bible, I would encourage you to take that Bible home with you. We would love for you to take that Bible home with you. You can learn more about who God is and about why we say these things drive us. So I would encourage you to do that. Well, I want to begin by reading Matthew chapter 9, verses 35 through 38. It says there, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." I want to say this. If you've been in church for any length of time, you may have heard this passage preached, usually by a missionary. And it's a call to missions. It's a call to foreign missions. And I want to say this. I think we do a disservice to this text if we allow this to just be a missionary text out there. It really is a text for us right here, right where we are. Because in this passage, I believe this passage clearly shows us one of Jesus' core values. One of the things that motivated his ministry. It motivated what he did. And for us, it shows us the first core value that we want to highlight in this series. The first thing is, okay, so what did Jesus do? What was Jesus' mission, vision, values, if you will, or mission, vision, and purpose, and strategy? I think we see that in verse 35. Look there. It says, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. What did Jesus do? He went to people. He went to where people were. He went to their towns and villages. He went to their synagogues. And when he got there, he taught them. He proclaimed the good news of the kingdom. And he healed the sick. He met their needs, both physical and spiritual needs. That's why Jesus came, to meet both physical and, more importantly, spiritual needs of people. And that was his vision. That was his mission of why he was here and how he did it. He went to them. That's his strategy. But I want to take a moment. I want to step back and say, but why? Why did he do those things? What really motivated him? What was at the core value of why Jesus did those things? Look at verse 36. It says, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Jesus was motivated by the needs of people. People were in a sorry place. They were harassed and helpless. It says they were like sheep without a shepherd. They were scattered. They had no direction. They had no protection. They were in a very bad place. It was pathetic. And Jesus looked at that, and he was motivated to do something to help them. Where did his motivation lead? It led, first of all, it says, he saw the crowds. He saw the crowds. He saw them where they were. Jesus went to them, and he saw them where they were. Now, I want you to notice something. When Jesus got to the crowds, what did he do? What did he say? Did he look at them and say, "Why are you guys such idiots? Why are you guys dumb sheep? Don't you know better? It's been 1,400 years, and you still haven't gotten it right? Are you kidding me? I mean, think about Moses, think about Abraham, think about David, think about the kings, think of all of these awful people. You guys are stupid sheep." Is that what Jesus did? No. He came and he looked at them and he said, "Oh my word, you guys are in such a horrible place. I can't believe you've gotten there." You know what Jesus didn't do? He didn't judge people. When he looked at people and he's like, "Oh my word, get a job." No. He said, "Here, let me give you something to eat. Let me help you out." He didn't judge people. When he saw them, he saw their needs. He didn't worry about how they got there. He said, "How can I help them?" And he helped them, and he saw them right where they were. Yes, you know what? They should have known better. But Jesus didn't judge them. Instead, what did he do? He was moved by their needs. Jesus saw the people where they were, and then he was moved by their needs. It says there, it says in the text, it says he had compassion on them. The word compassion really means to have feeling in your inward parts. That's what this word means. It has to do with feeling in your inward parts. Can you imagine? I mean, just think, it's like Jesus walked into a town and he saw all these people and he's like, "Oh my word, you're such in a horrible, sorry estate." And he got sick to his stomach. He's like, "Oh my word, are you kidding me? How bad is this? This is terrible." And he felt it in his gut. I mean, how about you? Have you ever had a situation where you're like, you're doing something and you see someone in need and it just makes you sick to your stomach? That's the idea of compassion. The word compassion in the New Testament is also translated in some places, it's translated to have pity on, to feel pity for somebody, or to act tenderly toward them. But Jesus, it says that he saw where they were, and then he was moved by their needs. Jesus was, he cared about them. But he didn't stop by simply caring in his head. Jesus then was compelled to action. He was compelled to do something to meet the needs of people. This is why he went from town to town and healed people. This is why he showed up in their synagogues and taught them. This is why he proclaimed the good news, the hope of the gospel of the kingdom of God. It compelled him to action. Jesus, ultimately, the core value of Jesus is compassion. Jesus was motivated by compassion for others. This comes out very clearly throughout the Gospels. There's at least 5 different times where this word compassion is used to describe what was motivating Jesus. I want to just take a moment, and I just want to look at 3 of them in the book of Matthew. So I want you to kind of mark your place here in Matthew chapter 9, so you don't lose that place. And we're just going to turn a couple of pages and look at a few of the situations where Jesus was moved with compassion. flip over just a few pages to Matthew chapter 14. It's like five pages in the Pew Bible. You just turn over, you'll find Matthew 14. And in verse 13 and 14, it says this. When Jesus heard what had happened. Now, let me stop here. Let me set the context. Here's what had happened. Here's what Jesus heard had just happened. His cousin, who was 6 months older than him, a kid he grew up with, good friend, great friend, had just been murdered. He just had his head cut off by the king. Jesus is sitting there and he hears, oh, your cousin, oh, by the way, Jesus, your cousin just died. When Jesus heard that happen, you know what he did? He withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. He did what any normal human being would do. He's like, I got to go process this. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to turn. This is just overwhelming. This is difficult. This is hard. And he did what was natural. He went to find a place of solace to mourn and probably talk to God and get his thoughts together. And verse 13 continues, hearing that Jesus was going in a boat to a solitary place, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. The crowds got to his solitary place before he did, because when Jesus landed and he saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them. And he healed their sick. Can you imagine being in that place? And when you see other people, they're bringing their sick family and friends to you and saying, here, help us, please. And Jesus saw their needs, and he was moved to meet their needs. With disregard, total disregard for his own personal needs in this situation. It's a pretty amazing thing. He showed compassion. Look at Matthew chapter 15. Turn another page to verse 32. Matthew 15, 32, it says, Jesus called his disciples to him. Different situation. Calls his disciples to him and says, I have compassion for these people. They've already been with me for 3 days and have nothing left to eat. I don't want to send them away hungry or they may collapse on the way. Jesus has been teaching. And they're kind of out in the wilderness a little bit. And a little bit later in the passage, we find out there were 4,000 men along with women and children. So if we just say there's 4,000 men and one woman to each man, that's 4,000 women and a half a kid between the men and women. That's 10,000 people who've been with Jesus for 3 days. And you know what? When they showed up, they brought their lunch. They didn't bring a week-long meal plan. Okay, they brought their lunch and it was 3 days. They're out of food. And Jesus is like, hey, guys, it's time to go home. But he looks at his disciples. He says, I see their need. I feel like we need to do something. And they're like, yeah, but Jesus, there's 10,000 people. What are you going to do? And he ignored the limitations. They said, we'll do whatever we can. We'll try to help as many as we can. And we're going to ask God to bless it. And you know what? God did. And they fed all of them. Why? Because Jesus was moved with compassion. And he ignored the limitations. And so he did whatever he could. Flip over to Matthew chapter 20. Matthew chapter 20, it talks about this again. Verses 29 through 34. This is a great story. As Jesus and his disciples were leaving Jericho, a large crowd followed him. Have you noticed so far, every passage, Jesus always has a large crowd with him? I don't know what large means. In the last passage, it was 10,000 people. So I don't know if there's 10,000 people walking with him. Probably not. But there's a large crowd. Okay, there's a big group of people. There's always a big group of people. Two blind men are sitting by the roadside when they heard that Jesus was going by. And they shouted, Lord, Son of David, have mercy on us. And you know what happens? So here's Jesus. He's walking down the road. There are people all around. Large crowd going after Jesus, going with Jesus. And you know what? When people, Jesus isn't teaching now, so it's not quiet. Right here, it's quiet right now, isn't it? Okay, it's quiet. What would it be like if you're kind of on the road walking along in a large group of people? What would it be like? It'd be like, okay, everybody, talk to your neighbors. Okay, talk to your neighbors. Go ahead. You can talk to each other. Okay, so you're talking to your neighbors. Okay, you need to be a large crowd, so you need to talk like to the loudness of two or three people. Keep talking. All right. And all of a sudden he's going, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on us." And the crowd didn't get quiet. The crowd actually walked over to it. "Hey, shh, it's Jesus. There's a big crowd here. He doesn't need to be bothered with you." They're like, "It really is Jesus?" And so they're all talking. And you know what? They're like, "Hey, Lord, Son of David, help!" I mean, they're yelling. And Jesus is walking. And all of a sudden, he catches it. He's like, "Whoa, hey, what was that?" And at that point, the crowd got quiet. Because Jesus walked over to him. The crowd kind of opened up and they're like, "I wonder what he's going to do. Is he going to like backhand him for like, why are you interrupting me?" And Jesus is like, "Hey, what do you want me to do for you?" He's like, "Hey, Lord, we want our sight. That's it." And Jesus walks over and he touches them and they're healed. Why? Because he had compassion on them. That's what it says. It was because of his compassion, because he saw their need. And here's what I see in that passage. And in the other two passages, Mark chapter 9, Luke chapter 7, in those two passages as well, Jesus took a very personal approach with his compassion. Yes, there were large crowds, but he went to just this simple little thing. This one time, large crowd, and he walks over. There's a funeral procession, and he walks over to the widow. And says, "Hey, let me help your son. I feel compassion for you. Hey, let me heal your eyes because I have compassion for you." He met their needs personally and individually. You see, Jesus saw people where they were. He was moved by their needs and compelled to meet people's needs. Why? Because Jesus had compassion for people. Jesus' compassion for people grew out of his nature because he was God. In Psalm chapter 103, verse 8, David is writing about a time when God revealed himself to Moses. And this is what he said. He said, "The Lord is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in love." You see, God's compassion is the very first thing that God revealed to Moses. He said, "I'm compassionate. I am moved by the needs of people, and I'm going to do what I can to help meet those needs." And that's why it was a core value for Jesus, because it was a part of who he was. But you know, I find it interesting. Turn back to Matthew chapter 9, because in Matthew chapter 9, there's one more very interesting part here. Verses 37 and 38, Jesus said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." Too many times we think that the harvest is talking about out there. The harvest right here is talking about opportunities to meet people's needs. Did you see the harvest when you walked into the building today? Look around right now. Do you see anybody around you? That's an opportunity. That's a part of the harvest, because there's people who need a word of encouragement. There's an opportunity for the compassion of God to go and meet the needs of people wherever you find yourself. That's what he's really talking about here. It's not just for evangelism. It's for all the time. The harvest, the opportunities to show compassion to people are all around us. And Jesus invites others, he invites us to see the needs of people, to be moved in our inward parts, to do something about it, and to meet those needs. He compels us to action. And when he tells us, "Ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest field," we all know this was like one of those like weird ploys of Jesus. He wasn't saying, "God, hey, guys, ask for God to do this for somebody else." He's saying, "Guys, there's opportunity all around you. Be the workers where you are. Show compassion to the people around you." This is why the first core value that we want to drive our ministry is Christ-like compassion. Christ-like compassion. We want to see the needs of people. We want to be moved to meet those needs and then compelled to do what we can to help others. And I hope that whether you walk into church and you can see that, when you walk into church, you should be moved by that. Who's that person who's sitting alone? Hey, can I go over and be an encouragement to them? Man, why isn't their spouse here today? Hey, I've never met that person before. Hey, I should go over and say hi and introduce myself. Driven by Christ-like compassion, we don't know what the needs of people are. Not like Jesus did. So we got to step out and go to people. And sometimes we need to step out of from here. It may not be here. Maybe at work. It may be our neighbors. It may be at school. We need to have Christ-like compassion to see people for who they are and where they are. And then approach them with the compassion of Jesus to help meet whatever needs we can. Here's another way to think about it. Christ-like compassion says that people matter to God. And because they matter to God, they matter to us. People matter to God. You know what? You can look at people and say, yeah, but they put themselves there. They're just a lazy bum. You know, why is he a homeless guy? Get up and get a job, bum. You can go work at McDonald's. No, that's a person that God died for. Go help him. And you might find out that what it was he had a great job and he got sick and lost his job and then his wife left him and now he has nothing because he went bankrupt trying to get healthy and no one will hire him because he has this gap in his work experience. People matter to God. You know what? Some of them might be bums. Some of them might be drug addicts. But they matter to God. How can I help them? They better matter to me. That's what Christ-like compassion says. I don't care how you got there, but I want to help you get from there to somewhere else. People matter to God, so they should matter to us. So how do we demonstrate Christ-like compassion? How do we do this? There's three things I want to challenge you with. First of all, don't jump to conclusions about people. I just talked about that. Don't jump to conclusions about people. How often do we judge people because we think we know why they are in the state they're in? Jesus never did that, and he knew the truth about people. He knew that they were dumb and that they made their own mistakes and that they were most of the reason they were in the position that they were in. And yet he said, I don't care. I'm going to meet their needs anyway. Don't jump to conclusions about people. Jesus saw people. He didn't judge them. He simply saw their needs, and he was moved to meet those needs. Number two, if you want to demonstrate Christ-like compassion, don't make excuses for helping people. There's a lot of reasons to not help people, aren't there? I don't have the time. I'm too busy. I don't have the money. It's an inconvenience. I just don't want to. There's all kinds of excuses to not help people. Hey, you know what? They need to learn something from this. There's all kinds of excuses to not help people. And we go through it day after day. Be like, oh man, if I go talk to that person talks my ear off every time I greet them in church. And I really just, I need a break today. Maybe they need an ear today. Don't make excuses. When God moves you, you go. And you meet the need. And then finally, don't push it off. Don't wait. Waiting only gives you time to come up with better excuses. You're like, oh yeah, that was good. I should have caught that one coming. But that's what we do. You know, sometimes our excuses are, man, that need's too big for me. You know, I just watched, or maybe we push it off in this way. It's like, oh, you know what? I just watched that infomercial about the starving children in Africa, so I'm just going to write my $10 check to the Starving Children of Africa Fund and send it in. Whew. Did my job of being compassionate to people. Because that's easy. And that's not Christ-like compassion. That's you trying to massage your guilt. You know what? The needs are bigger than any of us can handle. We can't handle them, but God can. And God says, I want you to help somebody, not everybody. So help that person that's in front of you. Maybe you're doing something and maybe you come across a need and you're like, hey, I can't do something about it right now. I'm moved by this. And maybe what you need to do is if you wait, I got to go home. I'm on my way home. But as soon as I get home, I'm going to talk to my wife about it. I'm going to tell her about this need. And then I'm going to contact somebody in my small group and say, hey, I saw this need and I'm moved by it. And I'm not sure it's bigger than me, but because you matter to God. You matter to me no matter what. Jesus was moved with compassion to meet the needs of people. We need to be moved with Christ-like compassion for the cause of the kingdom.